Okay. Well, thank you, and thanks, Mama, for inviting me to this very exciting conference. Here is a brief outline of my talk. Very quickly, I'll give a brief review of this concept that we've been working on in the past few years on using dynamic modulation as a way to create an effective gauge field for photon. After that review, I'm going to talk about some of the recent advances. So, as way of introduction, of course, we all start from trying to understand condensed matter system and trying to synthesize some of these condensed matter effect in the photonic system. So, if you think about in a solid state system how magnetic field is introduced, you think about a tie binding model that look like this, and the electron just hop around different sites. Now, if you apply a perpendicular magnetic field, the effect of the magnetic field show up in the Hamiltonian in terms of a round trip phase as you go around the edge of a single plaque or single unit cell. So in this case, the magnetic field basically comes in terms of a non-reciprocal round trip phase as electron hops around different lattice sites. So with this as inspiration, therefore, it will be interesting to think about photonic analog. And our approach here is to think about a dynamic modulation approach. So we consider basically the system that look like this. This system has two different kind of resonators centered at frequencies omega A and omega B. And the coupling constant between the nearest neighbor resonators are modulated harmonically with the modulation frequency chosen to be equal to the frequency difference between these modulators, between these resonators. In such a case then, what we're going to show is that the phase here is then the gauge field coupled to photon. This is closely related to pioneering work by Mamat, who's sitting here, and also Professor Carl Soto, who gave a talk this morning, on a similar idea of creating gauge field for photon. The important difference here is that in this construction, the time reversal symmetry or the reciprocity is explicitly broken. And also, this is it's broken in a way that do not require the use of magneto-optical effects. So to see that this gives you an effective magnetic field, all you need to do is to take this Hamiltonian, you go to the rotating wave approximation and do the rotating wave transformation, transform that into a time-independent Hamiltonian, and you see that the modulation phase here basically tells you a non-reciprocal hopping phase between nearest neighboring site. So with this, then, of course, you can specify these phases. And the important point here is that these are dynamic phase, so they can be specified in the modulator. And if you specify uniform phase everywhere, then you get a zero magnetic field. And you can do a Landau gauge and get a non-uniform specification of these modulation phase to give you a uniform magnetic field. And with that, you can dynamically create one-way edge mode. For example, here is a numerical example. We have a source here and in a dynamically modulated lattice. And we can generate a one-way edge state that propagates around. So this is a very brief review of what we have done in the past couple of years on thinking about these dynamic gauge field, this gauge field coming from dynamic modulation. Now, in the remaining part of my talk, I'd like to talk about some of the more recent work. In particular, I'm going to talk about some of our work in trying to think beyond the typical condensed matter analog, but really trying to exploit some of the unique capability of this system in terms of generating novel gauge potential effects. Then I'm going to talk about an issue during Florian's talk that come up, which is the issue of rotating wave approximation, to talk about how to think about these Hamiltonian beyond rotating wave approximation. And then finally, I'm going to touch upon efforts towards demonstrating this Hamiltonian, and in particular, some recent work in trying to do a resonator-free implementation of a similar gauge potential. So let me start with the novel gauge potential part. So again, we come back to this Hamiltonian here. Now, of course, when we start, we always start by trying to copy condensed matter physics. On the other hand, in this system, there's actually no intrinsic reason why you would prefer one particular choice of a modulation phase distribution in space or the other. So you could actually do simpler things. So for example, one of the interesting effects comes from not thinking about a constant magnetic field, but just think about a constant gauge potential. So again, you start with Schrodinger equation. So this is the Hamiltonian for electron. If you apply a constant gauge potential, then you basically add an A term here. So you basically shift the momentum here with an extra term that's the gauge potential. So this is well known. So the result of it is that if you think about the dispersion relation or the band structure of this Hamiltonian, now in the absence of A, you will have a omega k relation. And when you apply the gauge potential, what it does is that it shifts the omega k relation in k space. So consequently, what you have is that you actually shift the constant frequency contour by a value that's specified by the gauge potential. So for example, now going back to the photonic side, imagine that you have a medium with a refractive index m1, and therefore it has a constant frequency contour in k-space that is a circle. Now you apply a gauge potential on it. When you do that, all you do is you shift this constant frequency contour in k space by a value that's equal to the gauge potential. With this now, if you take two of these medium and put them together to create an interface, so on one side of the interface you have A equal to zero, on the other side of the interface you have a non-zero A, you can do your typical Snell's law argument, so the parallel wave vector along the interface has to be conserved. So consequently, a light that's coming in at an angle to the interface, upon going through the interface, will match into this mode by phase matching condition, and will actually negatively refract it. So in this simple gauge field interface, you will actually get negative refraction for a beam that's coming in here and refract it negatively. Now, this break time reversal symmetry, so you can imagine then, if you do a time reversal operation, you send wave that's coming back in here. In this case, again, you run through your standard Snell's law argument. You will see that this particular mode here has no corresponding modes on the left, and so it actually goes through total internal reflection. So you can repeat this process, and so you see that a single interface between these two medium, separated by gauge potential, will have a very interesting set of effects. You have negative refraction, you time revert, you get total internal reflection, you time reverse this guy again, you get negative refraction and total internal reflection again. So a single interface like that actually gives you a essentially directly a four-pole circulator. In this case, of course, you have a magnetic field, and the magnetic field come out of the discontinuity, so you have a B field sheet that's sitting right on the interface. So you have a sheet of a delta function B field sitting there. From a photonic perspective, there's nothing more complicated. In fact, you argue it's simpler compared with implementing a constant B field, but of course, if you try to implement this in a condensed matter setting, it will be a lot harder to imagine that you have a delta function B field sheet that you can create in an electronic system. Now, here is one interface, and so you can go a step further. You may say, well, let me put two interfaces in. So I imagine two surrounding region where there's no gauge potential, and I imagine a center layer here that I apply a constant gauge potential parallel to the interface. As I do that, again, I shift the constant frequency contour, and in this case, there then is a particular range of wave vector which has no corresponding mode in the surrounding media. So that you create basically a waveguide. Now it's a very unusual waveguide because you can see that the allowed mode actually only in this case has ky greater than zero. So if you were to go compute the dispersion relation of this waveguide in a simple model where just like that, where you actually specify the M1, you will get a dispersion relation that looks like this. So the blue region here is the light cone of the surrounding media. That's just a usual omega equal to C over N, omega equal to C over N1 times K. And the red region is the light cone of the center guiding layer. It's shifted along the KY axis by the gauge potential. So the guiding mode can be found in this region here. And you can see it only occurs at KY greater than 0. So this gives you a one-way waveguide, because the wave only propagates in one direction. It's actually a very unusual one-way waveguide. It actually is very different, for example, for the edge mode that I showed you just now. The intensity maximum does not sit on the edge, but rather sit at the center of the waveguide. So one may argue it's in fact more compatible with the more conventional waveguiding that you see in integrated photonics or in optical fiber. Now, in terms of implementation, in the model that I've just shown you, what you can imagine after you do the rotating wave is that you imagine a lattice like this, that you don't apply a gauge potential on the cladding, and you apply gauge potential on the core by specifying a uniform phase distribution inside the core. And this, as I've argued, of course, is not any more difficult, at least in the dynamic approach to implement, as compared to a constant magnetic field. In fact, you may argue this may be a simpler approach, because you only have two values that you need to specify as far as the gauge potential is concerned. Okay, so up to this point, I have talked quite a bit about this model, and in which case the modulation phase here, or the gauge potential, is a time-independent quantity. On the other hand, since this is essentially something that you modulate, you may quite be tempted to think about more complicated things. For example, you can try to make this gauge potential a time-dependent quantity. And so, so what you do is simply specify this phase here, and you can make the modulation phase here time dependent as well. So you imagine that now you have a harmonic modulation on the modulation phase. Okay. So since the modulation phase itself is a gauge potential, now we know, we expect, that this actually should generate a effective electric field, because the time dependency of the gauge potential is an electric field. And in fact, that you can explicitly prove it by a gauge transformation. So what you do is you start with a system that looks like this. For simplicity, I'm showing this in one dimension, but of course you can do that in three dimension as well. You have these resonator lattice, and you choose the hopping phase here to be, again, time-dependent, but you choose them in a spatially periodic way. So this actually is still a periodic system, and you have a Hamiltonian that looks like this. Now, to show that this actually generates an electric field, and you know, of course, that if a system is subject to an electric field, it won't be spatially periodic. What you can do a gauge transformation that I'm not going to go into detail, but if you stay within rotating wave approximation and do a local gauge transformation, you can actually transform this Hamiltonian into a Hamiltonian that looks like this, where the hopping part is now purely spatially periodic, and yet you have a resonant frequency here now vary as a function of time sinusoidally, but more importantly, also linearly dependent upon the position. So it vary as a function of space linearly. So this is just a simple local gauge transformation. So consequently, what we show here is that this phase with this form actually gives you a temporally dependent electric field. And there are a number of interesting effects about such a temporally dependent electric field. And here we just explore one consequence, and that's dynamic localization. So if you have an electric field in space, you would expect basically a potential profile that looks like this, or the resonant frequency as a function of position, that basically defines essentially a slope. And you can imagine your photon as a ball that, since it's sloped downward, it's going to roll downward. Now, if this electric field is time-dependent, as the photon is rolling down, you flip it. So now the photon, seeing that it's now sloped the other way, will have to go the other way. So you can see that if you have a time-dependent electric field, basically you are changing the slope like that, and the photon sitting there will have a hard time figuring out whether it will go left or right. So in fact, if you work out the detailed algebra, and this was done actually in semiconductor physics, or this should be 1986, quite a while ago, you can show that under the right condition, every floor k eigenstate in the system is localized. And this has been experimentally demonstrated in optics using waveguide array as an analogy. It has never been done in a truly dynamic system. So in what we propose here then is that the gauge field concept actually provide a very simple way, at least conceptually, to implement the concept of dynamic localization, but now entirely with time modulation. Yes? The question is whether this depends on the amplitude of the modulation. It does. There is a very specific condition on the amplitude of the modulation in order for this to be true. Sorry? Right. There's a critical point for this to happen. Okay. And that was pointed out, actually, in particular, I think, in this particular paper, the 1992 paper in particular. Okay, so so what we do then is to try to simulate a three-dimensional lattice using a modulated hopping phase, so a spatially periodic hopping phase that look exactly like this in a three-dimensional lattice, and when you have a time-independent modulation phase here, if at time equal to zero you have a wave packet that's sitting there, and at time later is, of course, going to move, but if you modulate the system as we specify, including the right modulation strength, then the any wave packet that you put in will just stay there without going anywhere, and that's, of course, the effect of dynamic localization. So what we show here, I guess, is that even though, I guess, as we start, we try to learn from condensed matter work in trying to create a constant magnetic field and thinking about things like quantum Hall effect and so on, I think this model actually has its own very significant richness that would be very interesting to explore. So now let me move on to address one of the points that was asked during Florian's talk this morning, and that's the issue of rotating wave approximation. So many of the argument about the effective gauge field rely upon the rotating wave approximation. I've been using that up to this point for every aspect of the talk that I've been given. Basically, you can take this Hamiltonian, and then you basically keep only the keep the rotating term, get rid of all the counter-rotating term, and then do the transformation, you will get a effective magnetic field Hamiltonian that looks like this. On the other hand, at least for the kind of experimental implementation that we're thinking of, where one uses electro-optic modulation, there is in fact a very strong motivation to really think about going beyond the rotating wave approximation. So as a quick order of magnitude analysis, the refractive index modulation strength, so I'm going to talk about these experimental aspects later, but roughly speaking, what we're thinking about is electro-optic modulation of silicon. And the refractive index modulation strength, fractionally, is somewhere on the order of 10 to minus 4 to 10 to minus 5. And in terms of a coupling strength that goes into the Hamiltonian, the V term then, this will translate into a coupling strength on the order of 10 to 100 gigahertz. On the other hand, in electro-optic modulator these days that people construct on chip, it's quite routine to get to a modulation frequency of 10 gigahertz, and certainly the trend is going higher. So consequently, if you just look at a standard electro-optic modulator in silicon, And you put it in the context of what we're talking about here in driving a transition between two states. It's in fact relatively straightforward to be in the ultra strong coupling regime. In fact, you have to work harder to get away from the ultra strong coupling regime, which is some of the experiment that I'm going to show. So consequently, and this is actually quite different, of course, from the atomic side of the story, where people have to work extremely hard to reach the ultra strong coupling. This is the case where, in fact, the ultra strong coupling is almost automatic in these systems. So as a result, it would be very important then to look into this Hamiltonian, but now look into the regime where the V here is comparable to the omega. In other words, the V, which is essentially the Rabi frequency, is comparable to the transition frequency, or even go beyond. So for this purpose, we, as an illustration, we'll take this Hamiltonian, and we would analyze a particular phase distribution in space. And this is a case where we basically have a magnetic unit cell that's four times the primitive unit cell. So you're going to see four subbands. And then what we're going to do is going to do the flocade analysis directly on this system. So we're just going to look at the flocade eigenstate and the quasi-energy of the system directly as a function of k. So first, we would do that in a weak coupling regime where the V here is far smaller than omega. Now, in this case, as you would expect, this is the band structure from the rotating wave approximation. So you see basically a band structure that looks like that with four subbands. And then you see a topologically non-trivial gap that's opening up. Inconsistency with when the system is applying a constant magnetic field. Now, instead of doing the rotating wave approximation, you can do that with the full flocade analysis of the same band structure. And in this regime where V is much smaller than omega, you get essentially the same result. Basically, each of the band here has a non-zero Chern number, and so these gaps here are expected to have a edge state. Now, with this as a starting point, you can then go into a full flocade analysis of this system. So in this case, let me lower this a little bit. Okay. So in a flocade analysis, you are plotting quasi-energy as a function of wave vector. And the quasi-energy, because the system is time periodic, is restricted, in this case, from minus omega to omega, where the omega is the modulation frequency. And for lack of a better word, we call that a temporal first Buran zone to draw a connection to the spatial first Buran zone. So when the modulation strength is much smaller than the modulation frequency, the band structure plotted here actually have bands that are very close to the center of the temporal first Buran zone. And there's a non-trivial gap between these sheaths now. That was just what I showed you just now. Now I'm just plotting it at a scale that's basically omega. So I plot it in a much larger scale. So it becomes flat, okay? So starting with this, now you increase the modulation strength. As you do that, these bands are going to move away from the origin here and occupy much more part of the temporal first Buran zone. However, the gap between the band, at least when these bands stay within the temporal first Buran zone, remains open. So consequently, the Chern number of these bands does not change. So as a result, even when you are in this already in the ultra strong coupling regime, where the V is comparable to omega, you still essentially, topologically speaking, have exactly the same band structure, and therefore you expect to see exactly the same edge state behavior. The Chern number does not change. Now, as you further increase the modulation strength, the topology of the quasi-energy is actually different from the energy. Quasi-energy has to wrap around, so it forms a ring, whereas energy itself is on a straight line. So the topology of the two is different. And as a result, as you further increase the modulation strength, you are really pushing this band away from this temporal first blue end zone, and in which case it should fall back on the other side. And as that happens, the gap actually closes. And it stays close as you further increase the modulation strength. So what you see here are a few things. One is that you actually see the same topology in much of the parameter range of the ultra-strong coupling regime. The second is that in the ultra-strong coupling regime also, there is a choice of parameter where you go through a phase transition that you go essentially from an insulator to a metal. And beyond that point, you don't see any gap at all. And this phase transition actually comes about entirely from the topology of the quasi-energy. So it is actually interesting to see that there are interesting topological physics in the ultra-strong coupling regime. Now, as far as some practical argument is concerned, you see that if you have a small modulation strength, which corresponds to the rotating wave approximation regime, you have fairly flat bands because the coupling between the nearest neighbor resonator is not very strong. On the other hand, if you increase the V, the bands actually, the bandwidth goes up because the hopping strength is larger. And so this practically actually is interesting because you will actually have less flat band here, have higher groove velocity, and therefore more tolerant to intrinsic loss at each individual resonator. And so here is a numerical calculation where we put in damping at each of the resonator and look at the one-way edge state. We put a source here, the state propagate, but if you're in the rotating wave regime, it actually doesn't propagate far because the groove velocity is not high enough. But if you go into this parameter range of ultra-strong coupling where you still have the gap opening, then the groove velocity is a lot higher for the damping rate. At steady state, the photon can actually propagate over much longer distance. So aside from the fundamental argument, it is actually interesting from a practical argument to look into this class of Hamiltonian, but also in the ultra-strong coupling regime as well. Yes? Oh, okay, I should go in more detail. This is something like a 20 by 20 lattice. And we put a source here. These are just resonators. And then we look at the intensity. So what you see is an edge state that's sitting here. And the edge does not, the state does not sit in the center because it's an edge state. No, it's just that the field actually penetrates a bit more. But the point here is that this is the steady state at a non-zero loss, so expect to see a finite propagation distance, so it won't go around the full circle. And so you, from this, you can actually infer how far it can propagate. Okay. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Now, if you dynamically manipulate the coupling as long as it's a rotating wave between, I can't believe that you can reabsorb this in the redefinition of the oscillation frequencies. Now, here in this regime, I wonder, shouldn't there also be a local oscillating manipulation?
In this case, we are solving for let me repeat the question. The question, I guess I'm paraphrasing, the question is that if you look at this, right, in the rotating wave, you get Rabi oscillation, and if you are beyond rotating wave, then you may have multiple frequencies and so on. Is that, am I?
No, actually, so from how a coupling between the 20 volts, at least the ones that I know.
Right.
That you can absorb this in the redefinition of omega A and omega B, but you want to go beyond this regime.
Right, so let me see if I can say your question correctly. The question is that in the rotating wave part, this one, all the effect can be absorbed in the rotating wave, and if you put a full term here, the additional terms. We are analyzing the full Hamiltonian here, so we're not doing any, in this case, the Floquet analysis, we're not doing any additional.
You start from this Hamiltonian, right?
Well, we start with this Hamiltonian. Yeah. Yeah, we start with this Hamiltonian. That part of it can be renormalized in. That part of it.
Also, if it's dynamically manipulated and manipulated into strengths, is this discussed?
So, if you really just look at a 2x2 Hamiltonian, right? 2x2 Hamiltonian with a coupling in this, which is what we do here, everything else follow. Now, in the rotating wave side, you need to be more careful. Okay. This is classical.
Yeah.
There's no squeezing. This is a classical modulation.
So, no, I think, you know, this last term is something derived from electric field in that resonator minus electric field in that resonator to the square.
Yeah.
And then I get the coupling, the hopping term, plus two local frequency shifts.
Right.
Now, the dynamic is
So yes, so in principle you can add another frequency modulation into here as well.
So my expectation yeah. would be that it should be
there. It should be there. In principle it should be there. But I think let me say it this way. The argument here that we see is that due to topological robustness, many of these terms does not matter in a significant range of the ultra strong coupling regime. Because the point is that as long as the gap remains open. Okay. So that means 30, right? Okay, yeah, okay. So it's a very good point, and because that Hamiltonian, you can add a lot of terms into it. But given that it's topologically non-trivial at rotating wave, you expect a quite a range beyond which is still topologically non-trivial. And that's really the maybe the philosophical point that we're trying to bring out in this study. So let me do my last part. Let me briefly touch upon how one can experimentally implement this before we talk about this resonator-free implementation of gauge potential. So what we do here experimentally is you imagine, for example, a silicon waveguide, you modulate the dielectric function as a function of time. You have two states, then you can drive a transition between these two. And the upward transition and downward transition in frequency then have phase that of opposite sign. And then you can convert this into a spatial-dependent phase shift, a direction-dependent phase shift. So this is our own experiment. This is an experiment in the radio wave frequency. And the essential component here is just a mixer. These you can all buy in Radio Shack, so it's not a hard experiment to do. And a mixer is something that takes a signal multiplied by a local oscillator to generate sidebands. And the phase of the local oscillator here get imprinted on the sideband with opposite sign. Okay. So now if you have two of the mixer together, you can engineer transition so that the frequency from left and from right are the same as you're going forward and backward, but the phase up on the two direction has opposite sign. So with that, you can straightforwardly construct a isolator. So in this case, we measure basically the transmission forward and backward as a function of phase difference. And you see a sinusoidal oscillation as a function of the modulation phase difference. But they are different. And in fact, in this system, it is very straightforward experimentally to get very high contrast, like 30 dB contrast over a very broad bandwidth. So one can really do very good isolator here. And we've done that then in the optical frequency side with photon-phonon coupling or acoustic-optical interaction. I would draw the attention to the fact that we're using a 50 megahertz phonon oscillation to create non-reciprocal response for a helium neon laser. The forward and backward contrast is about 13 dB in these first experiments. Okay. So one really can use low frequency phonon to create very strong non-reciprocal effect for photons. And you can do that with a silicon platform as well, and essentially doing electro-optic modulation. Now, last 2 minutes or so. So what we have here is really a direction-dependent phase shifter that has now been experimentally demonstrated. Forward and backward has opposite phase. If you look at what we have been doing up to now about trying to create effective magnetic field, we've been fixated by thinking about the resonator lattice. And I think as one of the comments during Florian's talk, there are all sorts of practical issues that you may not like to have a large-scale resonator lattice with many resonators. It's not that easy to construct. Now, if you think about what the physics really is just a direction-dependent phase. So, in fact, you don't need these resonators at all. And what we propose here is you can actually do a resonator-free implementation of effective magnetic field where you have these junctions. They are just waveguide junctions, and they're just scattering matrices. So I have a wave coming in, split into four parts, so it's just a splitter. And then you connect these splitters into the direction-dependent phase shifter. With that, we basically can create all the effective magnetic field effect. So since I realize that I probably am out of time, so I will stop here and thank you for your attention.
Thank you for the nice talk. I have a question. With the photonic crystal slabs, so we have a system where you have photonic crystal and you can have or with the metamaterials, you can have this kind of negative refraction effects. So this dynamic modulation, the rotator frame, could you recast in terms of effective dielectric and the magnetic constant for your, metamaterial? Or could you comment on the relationship or a difference with respect to this kind of systems?
It's a very good question. The answer actually in this case is no. If you look at all the effect, the metamaterial system, what you see is that the constant frequency contour all centered at gamma. And with the gauge field, you have the additional degree of freedom of moving them. So I would say that the gauge field concept actually provides a method for manipulating light propagation that complements many of the dispersion relation engineering that you see, especially in metamaterials.
This is regarding your last point about resonator fee implementation.
Okay.
So especially when we study these non-reciprocal effects in microwave domain, it turns out that the counter-rotating terms become much more damaging as you go off resonant. Mm-hmm. So do you think that when you do these resonator-free implementations, they will be actually much more affected by the counter-rotating terms, which you could earlier avoid?
I think that's an interesting point. I would have argued the specific way that we're implementing, which is to get a directional-dependent phase, we very strongly restrict the phase space that's available to the system. We really want to have only a few states available. In those cases, I would imagine the counter-rotating term would not have as dramatic an effect. And also, as I've been trying to argue, because of the topological robustness, even though the gauge potential concept is somewhat dubious, if you move beyond the rotating wave, the topological robustness should stay over a fairly wide range of parameters.
Yeah, so this is all ignore the polarization of the photon. If I put the polarization of the photon, what's the perspective for this long abelian gauge field? What is the abelian gauge field?
All these are abelian gauge field. I think it will be very interesting to look at non-abelian gauge field.
So is there any, what's the perspective? Is it any intrinsic difficulty to generate non-abelian for photon? So that means I have to consider the polarization of the photon, right?
Right. Let me answer a practical point first. In all these experiments, intentionally single polarization, because this is trying to do an actual optical component, you want to preserve polarization.
Okay, intentional. Okay.
Now, of course, if you imagine a system that where you have both polarization, you can do a non-abelian gauge field. I think there's no intrinsic difficulty to do that. One of the interesting questions, which I don't have a good answer for, rather is what effect would you be looking for in these non-abelian gauge field? If you look at the literature, it's not, at least to me, not completely obvious what the specific effect that one should claim. So if somebody can educate me, I will be, yeah. I really
will. We will chat privately.
Okay, yeah, okay. Then I really will appreciate.
Okay. Yeah.
In the scheme where you look at the effect of the counter-rotating terms with large coupling between them.
Right.
I mean, if those individual sites are really resonators,
right,
then they would have other modes per site. And when you look at the situation where this hopping has become of the order of the inter-resonator spacing, I don't know, or maybe your resonators are special, they are bulky. How do we not worry about?
I think the scale is still very different. The modulation frequency in electro-optics is, 10 gigahertz. So you're talking about two optical modes separated by the 10 gigahertz apart, which is very, very close. And even when the V is 10 gigahertz, all the other modes, in optics, it's very typical that you have mode spacing on the order of terahertz scale. I think Florian commented on that in the morning. When you just have a little bit of disorder, you have terahertz scale separation. So in fact, I would have argued the other way, which is that it's, and in many of these experiments that I show you, including the Hal-Lifson's experiment, one have to work very hard to get two modes to separate by 10 gigahertz. Right, the omega is far smaller than the free spectral range. Thanks for that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's much, much smaller in most of these situations.
How does it happen?
Because the free spectral, you're talking about 10 gigahertz kind of modulation frequency, and a free spectral range easily of terahertz scale.
So I guess there's two different meanings of strong coupling here, and I wanted to just tease out the difference. So the meaning of strong coupling in circuit QED and the like is the regime in which the coupling constant is comparable to the bare resonator frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
You mean ultra strong?
That's what ultra strong usually means.
Right.
So in your case, it would be a coupling constant of 100 terahertz.
Yeah.
Clearly not the regime of
that's
interest.
That's not the regime we're looking at.
But the mathematical thing is that the coupling term have both creation and annihilation operators in pairs,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which you could certainly do with a nonlinear material.
Mm-hmm.
So have you looked into that?
That's a very interesting point. We have not.